Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today. My pleasure, as always. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. It's good to have you here. Thank you for the business, if you've been listening already. Steve DelBianco is our guest. He's our good friend and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. He's vice president of the Association for Competitive Technology, that's ACT, to those of us who know them pretty well. And he is our good friend. Steve DelBianco, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you back. One of the things I want to go ahead and cover pretty quickly today, and by the way, and I've already told the audience, you know, a little bit about, reminded them about what you do, how ACT advocates for small businesses, primarily in the technology sector, but also, you know, not just companies who create technology, but companies who consume technology, like you, like all of you out there. The things that Steve and Jonathan and Zook and the others do there at ACT are very important for all of us, not just those who create technology, but those of us who use and consume technology. Steve, one of the things that I reported on with you guys, with you and with Jonathan and others, over a couple of 3 years, actually, was the trial, the antitrust case against Microsoft. That's been over, what now, about maybe 5 years, 4 years?
It's been 10 years since they started the investigation.
Since they started, but the trial's been over about four or five years, hasn't it?
Exactly.
Okay, so remind the audience, and folks, just stay with us for a minute because we're going to get to the point where this matters to you real quickly. Remind us what was the disposition of that trial.
Yeah, Jim, in 2001, right after 9/11 occurred, the court said, this is nonsense. This country has bigger fish to fry. Settle this case, gentlemen. Right? That's what the judge told everybody to do. They followed her orders, and they settled the case. And they really just had two sort of findings. One, they said that while Microsoft had acquired sort of monopoly stature, it had acquired it legally, but it was maintaining it illegally. It was maintaining its monopoly illegally by excluding certain computer manufacturers from being able to ship Windows unless they would ship it on all their machines.
What was happening was Microsoft had worked hard, folks, created an excellent product that people wanted, and that's what he means by legally. They had like 94% of the market for the products that they sold. But then they started adding other components and bundling them with their original technology, and that foreclosed other competitors. So in some ways, it foreclosed other competitors who make those other products, for example, a browser. It foreclosed those other companies from being able to get into your computer because Microsoft already gave you that. Is that a blue collar way of saying that?
You know, it's close enough because that's what plaintiffs were wanting to allege. But you know what? The appeals court said it didn't foreclose it at all because you and I both remember in the late 90s and early part of the 2000 decade that any of us could download Netscape, the browser. And in fact, 170 million people did. So that
I used Netscape the entire time, even though I had Microsoft, even though I was using Windows, and I was using their software, their suite of software. I used Netscape for years before I ever went to IE, and all during the trial, I was using Netscape.
So there was never any foreclosure of getting Netscape, but there was some suppression, and that was the second part of the final judgment. Was that Microsoft had used illegal means to sort of suppress the rise of Netscape and browsers and to suppress Java, which at the time was a popular tool for middleware to operate applications.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those two judgments, the sort of tortured logic that fit it all together, a lot of us in the industry, because at the time, remember, I was running an IT company, and I was building applications and delivering solutions on the Microsoft platform. I was one of about 100,000 companies around the United States, small business, that was building software, doing consulting and training and systems integration, And Windows is a fabulous platform. It was easy for me to integrate things. Microsoft was very helpful to help train my people and give us the material we needed. So we felt like it was an ecosystem of IT that was really beneficial for a small business.
A lot of wealth was created. A lot of solutions were created off of those platforms, weren't they?
That's right. So we were glad to see that given this rather narrow ruling, that there wasn't going to be a breakup of the Windows operating system.
Which was one of the proposals.
Believe it or not, it was what the original district court said. We should break up Windows.
Yeah.
Because one company has to run the operating system and the other company gets Microsoft Office and everything else.
Right.
Unfortunately, they backed off of that.
Hold on to that thought, folks. The reason we're bringing this up is because the time period for the consent decree, the resolution of this trial, is about to be up. And there's some people deciding right now whether it's going to continue or not. And then Steve will explain why that should matter to you. 2012, stay with us. We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. And my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. First one is where you can find the show and the archives and the newsletter and the blog and lots of stuff to help you with your small business. And the other one, askjim.biz, is our knowledge base where you can go to get questions answered right now. No barrier to entry. If you can get there, we'll let you hang out with us and check out all the stuff we have and use it to your advantage. Steve Del Bianco is our good friend and a member of our Brain Trust, Vice President with the Association for Competitive Technology. We're talking about the continuing saga of US v. Microsoft, and an antitrust case which is brought against Microsoft primarily at the urging of Microsoft's competitors. And this the consent decree is about to expire, isn't it? The resolution of this case, what Microsoft agreed to do with the courts and everybody, the time period for what they agreed to do is just about to run out, isn't it, Steve?
That's right. In November of this year, all of the elements of the consent decree expire. Now, Microsoft's already voluntarily extended one of them, and that was the one with respect to sharing the protocols for interacting with Microsoft communication with independent third parties. And Microsoft should do that, because the more they share that information, the more programmers like me will go out and develop applications that use it. So
right.
Improve interoperability. They also had to agree to make a change to the operating system so that a manufacturer like Dell, when they stick Windows on a machine and ship it, Dell may decide that they like Firefox or Netscape as their browser. And if they do, then Internet Explorer, Microsoft's browser, would have to be hidden. And Microsoft agreed to that. That's one condition. There were two other simple conditions. Microsoft had to explain and allow the same Windows licensing conditions to all the computer manufacturers. They couldn't give one special treatment. And finally, and this is a pernicious one, every 3-4 months, the court has to review Microsoft's activity, both its business practices and its technology practices.
Mm.
And that quarterly review happens right here in Washington, D.C., in the same courtroom where the appeals were argued. Is an opportunity where competitors come to the judge and try to say, well, listen, you need to stop Microsoft from encroaching into my sandbox.
Yeah.
You need to remove what Microsoft does in a certain area.
Nobody, small business owners, imagine if you had to go through something like that.
Well, think of what's happened in the real world. In the past 2 years, we've seen, I'll give you just three examples that affect all of us, right? A lot of us are very concerned about viruses, right? So
right.
We expect companies that ship us a computer to have antivirus protection, either bundled in, and then that's not a dirty word, bundled into the operating system or as a separate add-on. If we don't like what we have from Microsoft, we'll go buy it from Symantec or Norton and others. But sure enough, when Microsoft tried to add a lot of antivirus protection to their new version of Windows, Symantec shows up in that courtroom saying they shouldn't be allowed to integrate and bundle antivirus technology because it would come at our expense.
So,
I don't understand how that's good for consumers if Microsoft's not allowed to compete in the antivirus space.
So what does all this mean, Steve? All this, you know, Obviously, some of the things you're saying irritate me because I wouldn't want it happening to anybody. But Microsoft's a big guy. But they're a big kid on the block. They can kind of take care of themselves. Why should I, as a consumer, as a small business owner, why should I care about all this?
Well, I gave you just one right now, which is you and me as consumers want the best antivirus protection we can get. But if this consent decree continues, what it means is that, well, anybody but Microsoft can do my antivirus protection. And another area that I would bring you is desktop search. Google sort of invented this notion of having a little tool that will search not only your desktop,
right,
but also the Internet. Well, Microsoft integrated some desktop search tools to their new operating system. And sure enough, this summer, Google, not a small company, Google marches into that same courtroom with documents saying that the court needs to stop Microsoft from putting all of this code for desktop search into the new version of Windows because it competes, they said, competes unfairly with Google. I don't know how anybody could compete unfairly with Google, but that's what they're asking the court to believe. So now Google, Sun Microsystems, a handful of very large companies, want the court to extend the consent decree, to continue to make sure that Microsoft isn't able to compete with them. And they want to extend it. There's seven states now. California is the lead in that, but you also have Connecticut, Iowa, Kansas, Minnesota, Massachusetts, and the District of Columbia. And they say, look, things haven't changed. Windows is still on, 94% of the desktop, so there must still be illegal activity. We must still need a consent decree. But I think they missed the point, and so does the U.S. government. The U.S. Justice Department, plus five states, New York, Louisiana, Maryland, Ohio, and Wisconsin, feel the other way. And they entered documents just last Friday with the court saying, look, this case was about middleware, things like browsers, and that market is phenomenally competitive today.
Mm-hmm.
Let this thing expire. It's done its job. Let it
expire. One of the things that I said way back, Steve, you I probably said it when you were here, is that the interesting thing about the technological world we live in is that it's virtually rendered unnecessary antitrust laws. Because by the time you can bring a case against somebody for a technology infringement of some kind, before that case can be resolved, the rest of the technological world will have gone around that issue.
And Jim, that's an excellent point. And what if you do resolve the case, and then 10 years later, there's restrictions on a company that are measured by how many computers run Windows.
Right.
That ends up being irrelevant if we only use Windows as a way to support our browser.
Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with our good friend Steve DiBianco. We're going to talk about a couple of other things right after these messages. Stay with us.
In a white room with black curtains, near the station.
We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Steve DiBianco is our guest. Steve, give us your website, please.
Sure, Jim. It's www.actonline.org.
Actonline.org. Tell us about ACT.
We're a trade association with a handful of very large IT platform companies like eBay, VeriSign, Oracle, Microsoft, and we also have several thousand small IT systems integrators and software developers and training firms like the one that I had. And
do you find that you have quite a number of open source small companies?
I wouldn't call them open source small, but I would say this: nearly every systems integrator, software developer, and consulting firm is using both open source products like Linux.
Right.
Apache, and they're also using proprietary products. They use the best product for the job that'll suit them in helping a client. I mean, when it comes right down to it, whether you paid a couple hundred dollars for a product or got it for free doesn't matter much when over 3 or 4 years of using it, you've spent thousands of dollars.
Right.
Training.
Modifying it and adapting it, yeah.
You pick the best product, and you're not going to worry about whether it's a $100 license fee up front or if it's free.
Quickly, is the ICANN thing settled, the international ICANN dust-up, has that been settled?
Jim, there's a big vote tomorrow, and then dust up your...
Remind the audience what that's all about.
Yeah, I think what you're talking about is that today, if you go on the Internet and you want to figure out who owns a particular website, you can use a service that ICANN makes available called Whois.
Remind the audience who ICANN is.
And ICANN is the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. In other words, it's a nonprofit, independent corporation that sort of manages the domain name system that we use on the Internet.
Based in the United States, and that sticks in the craw of some international people. All right, go ahead.
Oh, it does. But it also sticks in the craw of some privacy advocates, because privacy advocates are suggesting that if I can go to the web and say, well, who runs AskJim.biz?
Mm-hmm.
And it brings up, my goodness, Jim Blasingame, that's a violation of Jim's privacy for me to learn who runs that website.
Right.
On the other hand, business interests and law enforcement consider it essential that they be able to discover who's running a website, because that's how they track down illegal activity.
The terrorist websites.
Not just terrorists, Jim, but copyright violations.
Right.
People that are squatting on a name just like your.
Right.
Just like your name. Neiman Marcus, spelled seven different ways at NeimanMarcus.com. All of those other different misspellings of Neiman Marcus were just designed to mislead people, to capture and get ad revenue. And
right.
And Neiman Marcus took them to court and won. Well, they found out who was running those bogus sites through Whois.
Mm-hmm.
Well, tomorrow, ICANN's council has to vote on a proposal of what to do with Whois in the future. And believe it or not, the proposal that will be voted on first is likely to be, well, we can't come up with a consensus, we're worried about privacy, so let's just remove the obligation of running Whois. So Whois would potentially go dark if tomorrow's vote were to get carried all the way through.
Well, I hope that doesn't happen. I'm as interested in privacy as the next person, but the thing is that information is not something that I care about other people knowing. I mean, it's not that big a deal to me, and there is an advantage for me to know who's running other websites.
Yeah, and for law enforcement and cracking down on copyright and intellectual property violations, we have to balance that against whether or not someone's comfortable revealing who they are.
What do you think is going to happen?
I honestly think that if it gets approved by the council, it'll still be defeated at the next level up of the board. And I will be continuing to work very hard behind the scenes and in the public forums to make sure we get a rational way of giving certain people the privacy that they want while maintaining law enforcement and industry access.
But see, Steve, having availability of information on Whois is no different from having a mailing address and a phone number in the public domain, in my opinion.
No, you're exactly right. And privacy advocates would prefer that all that be hidden from you. And we are suggesting it can't be hidden in all cases. Law enforcement's got to have access to that information. We also want it from the standpoint, let me give you an example, banks. Banks are constantly victimized by phishing emails. Those are
right.
The emails that pretend to be your bank and want you to give up your ID and password.
Right.
When a bank starts learning that their customers are getting hit with phishing emails, what does the bank do? They go to the website that generated those emails,
mm-hmm.
and they want to know who's running it so they can get a law enforcement official.
Find the people and have them arrested.
Well, we can't have it where the people sending the phishing emails are hiding behind a privacy
bank. That's exactly right. Well, keep us posted on that, Steve, and thanks for the hard work that you're doing. Say hi to Jonathan and all the folks there at ACT that do such a great job, and we'll see you next time.
Jim, thanks for all you do.
Thanks. Steve Del Bianco, ladies and gentlemen, with the Association for Competitive Technology. That's actonline.org. Check that out. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.